Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 18th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well.
Good. And we're joined by our other frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Well, if you've ever heard of a black hole, you have heard, this sort of physical concept of the black hole. You probably heard of Stephen Hawking, who is a physicist, a brilliant physicist, confined to a wheelchair by a disease that ravaged his body for many years, but evidently didn't affect his mind, who cranked out wonderful, impressive theories. In fact, Hawking radiation, you know what Hawking radiation is? So it turns out in theoretical physics, the empty space is actually not empty, but is making little pairs of particles and antiparticles all the time. I mean, so this guy, Hawking, one of his big ideas is that you could see a black hole because, I think this is fair, is that when these little vacuum perturbations, where this little particle antiparticle came apart for a microsecond and then went back together, if they did that at the edge of a black hole, one particle fell in and the other particle could come visit you. And so he had this way of seeing these interstellar objects, or theorizing about these interstellar objects, that was like amazing for a guy that was bound in a wheelchair. Anyway, that's. It turns out that he has passed away this past week. The world has lost a great mind, and it's something we ought to note, especially in an age where science doesn't get the respect it deserves. A guy like Stephen Hawking was quite a guy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he appeared on the Big Bang Theory, in fact, or at least they had his voice on the Big Bang Theory. I'm not sure that's the capstone of anybody's career, but there you go. Goodbye, Stephen Hawking. Good work. I guess the other thing, recent show, we got chatting about a topic that generally goes under the heading of environmental justice, which is something that you need to think about because it's not obvious exactly what it means. And I thought we'd return to that. But tell me, DR, lead us into a discussion about environmental justice based on your perspective.
Well, it's very interesting from the standpoint of the need to stand up against those who have furthered environmental injustice. And I thought about this within the context of the recent news story about former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, basically declaring that he's going to, I guess, sponsor or support, similar to the Peter Thiel, I guess in his own version of the Peter Thiel lawsuit against Gawker, that he's going to support a lawsuit against the fossil fuel industry, which he notes, quote, the oil companies knew from 1959 on, they did their own study, that there would be global warming happening because of fossil fuels, and on top of that, it would be risky for people's lives that it would kill, unquote. And he basically is making the point that these entities knew fully well that they were going to harm public health and damage people's lives, and they behaved with reckless disregard. And so therefore there needs to be an uprising, not only an uprising in the streets, as we've seen with the various marches, the climate marches over the years, but an uprising in the courtroom to basically push back and hold accountable those who have knowingly inflicted injury upon the public.
So it is the
fossil fuel industry that for all intents and purposes, and the chemical industry, what have you, that effectively gave birth to environmental injustice, essentially.
So tell me, what's Schwarzenegger? This is Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California, right? The weightlifter, the guy with a heavy Australian accent. Mm-hmm. Austrian accent. What does he say he's going to do?
Well, according to a Politico, he said he's in talks with several private law firms and preparing a public push around the effort. This is going to be modeled after the various lawsuits, private lawsuits, not so much the various DAs, but the mm-hmm. private lawsuits against the tobacco industry.
Okay.
He's going to terminate big oil.
Well, God, so, I mean, I think you're right. Standing up to these people who knowingly have done things that are unhealthy, and I guess I would say that many of the refineries that the fossil fuel industry has placed has been placed in placed in locations with the least political pushback, because it's it costs the least amount of money, and that effort amounts to an environmental injustice, because for better or worse, is I think, correct me if I'm wrong, there's probably some correlation between being in a disadvantaged community, being in a sort of an urban center, and being, you know, a place where you might want to put a power plant, a refinery, and that is an example of the kind of environmental injustice that we need to push back against, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, obviously, these industries, the industry knows that, when you're going to put a dirty refinery in an area, you know, the best place from their perspective to put it in is a place where, you know, where you assume there'll be little political resistance, or people will not have the political power to push back, essentially.
Right. And that political power typically translates into having the money, right? Mm-hmm. Have the economic vitality in the community to support a pushback. And that's just, it doesn't happen in a lot of disadvantaged communities.
When's the last time you've seen a polluting plant placed in an area where there's been a major political donor?
Exactly. So, I mean, I think that there's lots of examples of what you could imagine to be environmental injustice, environmental racism. You can kind of tick them off on one, you know, you just say the word, you say Flint, right? And mm-hmm. people recognize that this was a thing where Flint, Michigan, tried to save money by basically putting the lives of its residents at risk. So it was money over the lives of the community. You've got the whole example of the Dakota Access Pipeline, where they thought they could ram the people in Bismarck, North Dakota, all the white folks in Bismarck didn't want the pipeline upstream of their water. So they rerouted that Dakota Access Pipeline near the Dakota Sioux tribal land to ruin their water, and of course they won, right? You can look at what's happening in Puerto Rico today. I mean, disadvantages, you know, low political impact communities in Puerto Rico are still without power after God knows what is it now, six months. Right? So there there was recently a report, I was trying to find it, I couldn't dig it up, but saying that I'm not sure how the statistics works out, but something like there's a 75%, you're 75% more likely to live near a refinery if you're black than if you're white, right, in this country. So it's just the odds that you're going to be in adjacent to a stinky refinery goes way up if you're a person of color. Like, okay,
and
is that fair?
Especially now, under the current administration, there was some news recently, about Uniontown, Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. What happened there?
That was a big deal. So Uniontown, Alabama is a mostly poor majority black community in Alabama, where it's been for more than a decade, it's been a home to something called the Arrowhead Landfill, which is about twice the size of New York's Central Park. And so it's been working there. But in 2009, I think the landfill began accepting shipments of toxic coal ash, which is, you know, for as background, toxic coal ash contains arsenic, mercury, and boron, which can affect the nervous and reproductive systems. And according to the EPA, I don't think it was written recently, but according to the EPA, people living within a mile of unlined coal ash storage ponds have a 1 in 50 risk of developing cancer.
Wow.
So in 2013, some folks in this town, Uniontown, which was receiving all of this coal, this, you know, 4 million tons of coal ash, filed a complaint under the Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. Mm-hmm. And this week, the EPA dismissed the claim, saying there was insufficient evidence of their civil rights.
Really?
Yeah, which, the insufficient evidence that the authorities in Alabama had breached the Civil Rights Act. We're talking about stuff that if you live within a mile of it, you have a 1 in 50 risk of developing cancer.
Yeah.
The EPA said, nope, It's fine.
Well, this is and it is ongoing today. This is a news item you have real time now, right? This is not some story of 20 years ago, right? This is and Trump's EPA, as disgusting as it has become, is kind of, I mean, environmental racism has been around for a long time, right? And it represents a cross cut of basically American culture, because all these stinky plants get put in these neighborhoods. I mean, so I mean, I think that there is a huge amount of evidence that environmental injustice, environmental racism, pick your term, are occurring, right? You can see it in the news. I guess one of the interesting questions is to think through the question of how all this relates to climate change, right? I mean, why, as a climate hawk, why do you care, right? I can think of several different reasons, but I'll go quiet for a minute, let one of you guys speak. I mean, why should a climate hawk care whether or not there is the exact location of a power plant in Uniontown, Alabama?
Well, I was thinking in terms of, you know, first of all, in terms of that finding by the EPA, you can imagine Scott Pruitt saying, well, what about those other 49 people? You know,
they're just fine.
You know, his sort of twisted mentality. But again, it goes back to the issue I've brought up before, that scene in, I think, the first season of Years of Living Dangerously, where Chris Hayes shows the disparate injury inflicted upon less wealthy residents in New York after Superstorm Sandy. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, just the fact that you have people who are already in a state of disadvantage being placed into a position of further disadvantage as a result of climate change. So in other words, you know, inherent in addressing climate is the need to address inequality. And because And this goes back to the whole ideological conflict over climate change, because the remedying of inequality necessarily involves an activist government, those who oppose an activist government will be vehemently opposed to any efforts to address climate, to the point of even denying that there's a climate problem.
So you have said it well, that in the... Well, no, I'm not sure I can reproduce. But inherent to the idea of this... of the world you're trying to build is a rejection of this kind of inequality, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not, I mean, if you could snap your fingers and make all carbon dioxide go away, would you still want to address these inequities? And I think that I would say yes, that these are inequities that should be dealt with as we create the new world that we're trying to move into, right? I mean,
Well, and, you know, to sort of build upon that, the good news is that the green economy, I mentioned Van Jones in the last podcast and episode we did that on Thursday, but, you know, he talks a lot about the green economy, right? He was the green jobs czar under Obama for a little while. That was not his official title, but, but, you know, he talks about how the green economy can deliver new sources of work, wealth, and health to low-income people while honoring the earth. So, you know, as DR said, inherent in the need to address climate is the need to address inequality. Well, the good news is that if we start doing things, if we start building up this green-collar economy, right, getting people out with a caulking gun and a clipboard to weatherize houses, that's a job that can be trained fairly easily. You can get folks out there and they weatherize houses. That's better for, you know, energy efficiency. People start to rise to become managers. It lifts up the economy across the board. And so you end up solving climate change. You end up boosting, helping to alleviate some inequality. And, you know, as Van Jones says in his book, we can make what is good for poor black kids also good for the polar bears and good for the country. This is a quote from Van Jones. But, you know, point being there, it's all interconnected, and a more equitable system for all means Well, more prosperity for all. I mean,
again, I mean, I'm just in this discussion. I mean that the we close the show talking about a durable future, right? And the durable future has to incorporate this sort of equality or lack of inequality that we're talking about here. So it's all part of building. So interesting. I mean, I think there's also. I want to talk a little bit about the international aspects of climate injustice, but I mean, I think that certainly on the national level, aside from the inherent rightness of being on the right side of history here, these are also groups that are your natural political allies, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the big movements now, and there's stuff with Bill McKibben talking about the opposing infrastructure at every step, right? So you want to oppose new fossil fuel infrastructure. That goes hand in hand with community efforts to oppose the construction of new fuel infrastructures in disadvantaged communities, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, here in Massachusetts, you know, Weymouth is not a disadvantaged community, I don't think, but I mean, they're getting a compressor built, right? So now you have this fusion of opposition at the climate global level and opposition at the neighborhood level to this thing that we all agree should not be built. Interesting.
Well, you know, to the point, I mean, it's not like greenhouse gas emissions are like, I'm just going to stay in this community, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to hang out here, right? So if there are greenhouse gas emissions anywhere, they're everywhere. Right. And, you know, that's what makes it an international problem, is that our pollution is affecting, you know, China and India and everybody and this, you know, low-lying Pacific Island nations. So, you know, we are one world.
Well, I think the other thing I just wanted to touch on was the question of the international aspect of environmental justice or injustice, right? And that we've talked a lot about things that happen here in the United States of Flint and Uniontown and how they're all connected here. But at the same time, there's this massive injustice that goes on of rich America consuming all of the resources, and that the poor parts of the world will suffer through desertification, food risk. And I'm trying to find some notes here, but I'm saying that the people that are most affected by climate change are people that live on the edge of poverty, that live near the ocean, or that live in big cities, right? And those are the people tend to be the disadvantaged of the rest of the world, right? Mm-hmm. Subsistence farmers, you know, people that live in Bangladesh or people that live in Calcutta, right? Millions and millions of people, they're the ones that are going to get hammered by climate change and the cosmic injustice that entails.
And think of the scam that the deniers have pulled off in specifically in this country, you know, connecting the national and the international. When you bring that issue up about the international injury that's going to be inflicted as a result of domestic pollution, what's the first thing that the deniers have or the political allies of the deniers have taken to scream? They'll either scream political correctness, or they'll call you a social justice warrior. Now, if you think about the literal term social justice warrior, that shouldn't be a pejorative. You know, it should not be considered a
pejorative. Please staple that on my forehead.
Exactly. In fact, there's a lot of social injustice that needs to be warred against.
Mm, yeah, true, man. True. Yep.
Well, look, we've consumed our allotted 18 minutes and 59 seconds of time already. But I think that the question of, so just let me just summarize this way. The question of environmental justice is enormous, and we have barely touched any of the surface here. And I'm sure that many people listening know a lot more about this than the three of us. So please give us your views. But environmental justice is a root issue, or should be a root issue in the climate movement, right? As climate activists ought to be aware of this aspect of what they are thinking about, and that we're not purely worried about the polar bears. We may be worried about the plankton because that's our food supply, but that there's this moral level of what's going on that drives our actions, and it has to do with the injustices that are, you don't see at first glance in the sort of this environmental quotation marks venue, right, where we talk, but it's an important issue, right? You guys would agree?
Oh, 100%.
Definitely. All right.
All right. Well, look, we will. I hope we can come back to this topic because there's a lot there. Dear listener, if you have anything that you want to tell us for wheel or woe, right, that you think we get something wrong or you think we get something right, because God knows whose toes we've stepped on in this discussion, we of course, are interested. So let us know. All right. And you can check out, if you want to find out why we think what we think, you can check out the links that for some of the stuff we discussed at the blog. That blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find a link to that blog on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using almost any of these new podcast distribution apps. But of course, there's things like Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean. Search for the Climate Minute. It'll search for Massachusetts Climate Action. That ought to bring us to you. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks for being here, Mariah.
My pleasure.
Hey, we'll talk to you all again sometime real soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.